it coming to Portland August 4th. Great talking with you.
Yes, we're looking forward to being there as well. Thank you so much.
You take care. That's it for Stage and Studio, and my thanks to engineer Tave Fache-Drake. If you missed any of the show, visit stageandstudio.org or kbu.fm/stageandstudio. You can also download shows at iTunes, and don't forget to like us. Please like us on facebook.com/stageandstudio or tweet me at @stageandstudio. Till next time, I'm Dime Roberts.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Playing Monopoly with God and Other True Stories on August 4th, 7 p.m. at the Old Church in Portland. Playing Monopoly with God and Other True Stories will be performed by Melissa Bangs, who studied with the Upright Citizens Brigade. This is her one-woman comedy show about postpartum psychosis and healing through shared moments, laughter, and tears. Again, that's Playing Monopoly with God and Other True Stories on August 4th, 7 p.m. at the Old Church, 1422 Southwest 11th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kbu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Hello, KBOO listeners. Up next, we have Art Focus. Art Focus will speak to Henry Frison about his work during Portland's historic Albina Mural Project from 1977. That program is made possible by KBOO members and support from Chamber Music Northwest, featuring the 2017 Summer Festival, 5 weeks of music, over 30 concerts, more than 60 artists and ensembles, 8 world premieres, 2 theatrical experiences, and a celebration of women composers that spans 9 centuries. More information at cmnw.org.
Hi there. My name is Eric Bartels. You're listening to Art Focus on KBOO-FM 90.7 Community Radio. This coming Saturday, an exhibition of work by the Portland artist Henry Frison will open with a reception at the Greenhouse Gallery on North Killingsworth Street. And we have with us by phone Henry Frison. Henry, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Are you excited? There are going to be, I'm told, somewhere in the neighborhood of 20 works that you've done, some recently, some in the past. Are you excited about the collection that people will be seeing?
Yeah, very much so. Yeah, I'm glad to be able to do that.
When was the last time you had a number of this size in an exhibition in Portland?
Well, I really haven't had one where I was selling, trying to sell my originals and showing my originals. Most of the time, I just had prints and stuff out there for sale, and I usually have like 15 or 16 different ones. So now I'm kind of able to, I dug out a lot of my original prints that I had kind of put back and forgot about and say, oh, this is pretty good, so I'm glad they're going to be in the show because it kind of bring everything up to date again.
Are all of the works in the exhibition portraits? And I'm told that many of them are going to be portraits of family members.
Well, I think it'll be a few family members in the showing, but I have a lot of historical stuff that's going to be shown, portrait-type works.
Has that always been a specialty of yours, as opposed to, I know that you've done nature scenes and also larger public artworks, which we'll talk about in a little bit, but the portrait has always been a favorite of yours as an artist?
Yes, as you know, ever since I was a little kid, I started out 7 or 8 years old drawing cartoons, and it would be, I found out I could capture the look of the cartoons just like it was in the cartoon. So I said, oh. And then I gravitated on to drawing people, and I found out people was a challenge. You know, most artists try to stay away from drawing people because it's harder. You have to capture the looks, the personality, all that kind of stuff. So most artists go to landscapes, animals, stuff like that. But I found it a challenge to draw people, and I love the challenge.
Was there a point where you figured out that you had sort of achieved that ability to capture the essence of a person in a portrait?
Ever since I, you know, got through with the cartoons, I started drawing people, and I was just sketching at the time, but the sketches would come out real nice. So, yeah, I guess I've been all, it was a God-given talent.
Is there a secret to it? What is the, is there's one thing that sort of helps you capture the spirit of a, or the look of a person? Can you tell us what it is? Is it the eyes?
That's kind of hard to do. What I think is you have to be born with that talent to pick up fine details and stuff like that, to make sure you don't vary from the, you know, the original look or the original person. Because each thing you do might make a person look a little different. So you have to try to capture each part of the, you know, the eyes, the nose, the mouth, the everything, you know, the smile, the personality. So it's a big challenge, but, I've been able to do that pretty well.
You do it very well. You do have formal art education. You graduated from art school?
Yes, I came to Portland because my uncle told me, I was living in New Mexico, and he told me that in Portland they had a lot of art schools and galleries. Well, where I was from, it was a small place, no art schools, no galleries. So I got a chance to come to Portland because of my art, and I did get in art school. Once I got to Portland, I found out I could make more money, a lot more money than what I was making in New Mexico, because everything is kind of union out here. And I got out here and started making money that I thought was big money. Mm. And I said, oh, man, I don't need to draw now. I'm making good money. So I didn't do it for a while. And then finally I got sick, and they thought I might become like a paralegic or something, and I might could lay in bed and still draw and try to make funds for my family. So I was on SSI. I worked in the foundry here for 10 years, and then I got on SSI because I had some problems with my spine. And they told me that they would pay for me to go to a school and learn a trade or do what I thought. And I said, oh, I'd love to do my art. And they said, that's good, because you could lay in bed and still probably do that. And I said, yes, that's right. And so they funded me to go to art school. And I went to, I searched out Portland State, and they had another commercial art school downtown at 420 Southwest Washington.
Okay.
That was run by Les Villas, was the guy that running that. But they had some good teachers in there, and so I learned a lot of things, and I learned to a little bit about making people look a little bit, you know, better, and put that glow in them, and they also gave me some pointers on cartooning, fashion designing, sign painting. So I was able to study all of that at advertising art school. So that's the one I chose to go to, because Portland State didn't do all of that. They didn't learn you to do the graphic design, you know, the
right,
all that. You had to do basket weaving and maybe a few paintings, and they had a few things, but it wasn't what I wanted.
What was the name of the school where you studied, and does it still exist?
No, they moved out from downtown. It was called an advertising art school, and it was at 420 Southwest Washington Street.
Okay.
But they finally moved out to the Beaverton area somewhere years after I left.
Okay. But there was more of a focus on commercial art.
Right.
Do you think that that gave you sort of enriched your skill set, that concentration on a more commercial style of painting?
Yes, it did, because they learned, they taught how to do perspective on stuff, how to, you know, I could take a can of food and draw it, and, you know, make it look like it was a can sitting there, and you would see the, you know, the perspective of it. You know, some parts of it might be small, and that coming out at you would be bigger. So it learned me a lot about that. Plus, I learned to do color. Before I went to art school, I was just sketching.
Right.
And it was great. But when I got to school, I said, I want to learn to do painting and art, you know, with color. And so it really helped me a lot. Plus, the sign painting and all that taught me a lot of the basics of painting stuff outside or on car doors that would last through the weather. It gave me a perspective on how to do stuff on a large scale, and that's kind of how I got into the mural project.
I'm eager to get back to this the piece about the public art and the murals. What year did you finish your training? Was it in the 70s?
I think it's around. I think it was in like 77, because when we finished, I joined as soon as I got out of art school. I joined the mural project, and we did our first mural openings in 78. So we worked 6, 7, 8 months something on them. So I would say in the late 77 is when I kind of finished.
So you're referring to the Albina Mural Project, which began in 1977. There were several artists involved, some of them, all of them African-American?
Well, we had one girl that was, I think she was Oriental, I think.
You're thinking of Jenny Harada, and
right.
Her background is Japanese-American.
Okay, that's what I was thinking, Japanese.
Yeah. Yeah, Henry, let me step in just for a moment. That's Joanne Alexiak, who I don't think I introduced at the top of the show. Joanne is a Portland artist and activist and public art advocate and defender, and she will jump in here as we go along.
Yeah, that's fine. She have helped me out a lot, do certain shows and stuff, and she was in front, you know, to bring me to the public, and sometime it would be funds involved with me. And down through the years, I think if it wouldn't have been for her, it would have been a whole lot of things I wouldn't have been able to do. So that's fine. That's great.
Yeah, Joanne, I should mention, promoted the upcoming show at Greenhouse, brought it to the attention of Cole Reed, the owner of Greenhouse Gallery.
Right.
So instrumental in making the upcoming show happen. Henry, the Albina Mural Project came some 10 years after something called the Wall of Respect out of Chicago, in which I don't know if it's fair to say that it was a sort of the launch of awareness, some social awareness depicted in these public artworks, large murals on the sides of buildings. In 1977, you're right out of school and you get involved in the Albina Mural Project, which produced works on a building at the intersection of Alberta and MLK, what's now MLK. Is that right, Joanne?
No, the building was right on the corner of North Vancouver and Alberta. And back then, in the late 70s, the entrance to the building was actually on Vancouver Avenue. It's way. But when the Albina Mural Project started, the entrance was right on Vancouver, and so those murals were right there along that western side of the building, and then around the corner on Alberta.
And they're no longer there.
No, they was a multi-service type center. They had a lot of, you know, things for the people inside that building, the reason why they picked that building for us to put the murals on. It was a kind of community, you know, thing for helping a lot of people.
Okay. Henry, I wanted to ask you, were at the time of the Albina, you became involved in the Albina mural project, was it in your head that there was an opportunity to represent certain issues in the work you were doing?
Yes. And when I joined the group, they wanted us to kind of decide what we wanted to do as far as a historical type painting and about what was happening, you know, kind of at the time. And I decided I would do the first panel that we opened, and for the dedication, the opening was Martin Luther King. And I had like 5 or 6, 7 different segments of his life, and so that was just what I wanted to do, is something like that. I involved some Portland people in the mural as far as putting their faces on some of the people, which they wasn't there at the actual events that went on, but I had where the dogs was biting the guys on in the protest marches and stuff like that. The police had them there, and I had the funeral of Martin Luther King on there, and I had a segment where he was jailed, and I also had other political figures like President Kennedy and some of the African leaders.
Ralph Abernathy, I think, was one of them in the front.
Yeah, when he was talking with some of those people, I had something about them on that mural too.
I wonder if you look at what is out there today in terms of public art, and if you see those kinds of depictions, is enough interest being taken in sort of representing some social justice issues in this form of art?
No, I haven't seen very much of that. It's been a couple of people that did some art since then on buildings like that, but usually they were just a design or something to really kind of look at. It didn't have much about history or black history.
So there,
because we also done, outside of Martin Luther King, I did a thing on black cowboys, because I'm from Texas, and I was raised up on a ranch, a big ranch, and all my uncles and dad and all of them was real cowboys. They broke horses, they herd cows, and they did everything on ranch that a rancher do. And they was trained horses, broke them, sold them, sheared sheep, did the whole bit. So I was came up in an environment where I was thinking that a lot of people think the black people only did farming and picking cotton and stuff like that, which I did some of that too. But I wanted to bring out the fact that it was a lot of ranch hands used as black people, and black cowboys is what I particularly say. But and they worked and did that.
You had an aunt and uncle, Henry, that raised horses in East Portland, is that right?
Well, I had a cousin that got some horses here in Portland.
Okay.
It wasn't my uncle, but he's my cousin, and he rides them. He rode them in the Rose Festival parade and 2 or 3 different parades around here, and they ride them right downtown, and that was kind of funny to me.
Joanne, you were going to say something.
I guess I was remembering that you had some family members that were training horses out in a place where the airport is now.
Yeah, that's the one I'm talking about.
That's where your cousin's place was.
And his name is Lewis Coleman, and he had horses, still got them. And I saw they was in this Good in the Hood march, but they wasn't on the horses. They was marching on feet. But I was always anxious to see them riding the horses. They are the Buffalo Soldiers is what they were representing.
We had as a guest on the show recently, Kayeen Talton Davis, who, along with her husband, Cleo created the Black Williams Project, a series of installations, mounted signs and sidewalk plaques along North Williams Avenue in North Portland. Very interesting. Have you seen it, Henry?
Well, you know what? I don't get to get around much anymore. I kind of have a hard time getting around, and my wife is kind of, you know, bedridden, so I kind of don't get to go around and see too much right now. But I think myself, and I think Joanne was with us for a while, we was trying to get that particular grant to do that stuff, do some stuff on the streets. And I was just walking down there the other day, and I saw one little small sign about about 12 by
that. Yeah, that sounds about
15,
right.
And I think that was one of them. But we was looking at a real big, larger scale than what I've seen, you know. So I haven't seen very much, but I think they could have. Well, I don't want to criticize.
Well, it's not the same as the entire side of a building, but they, I think the artist
did some bigger stuff, is what I'm saying. The group I was supposed to be with, we would have did something that would catch a person's eye just driving down the street. They, oh boy, look at this, you know. But they got the grant. You know, congratulations.
Well, and is that the power of a mural? And it's something that's been around a long time. You know, I wouldn't even venture a guess as to how long people have been making large images on the sides of buildings. Joanne and I were talking earlier about, I don't think it's particularly difficult to interest artists in doing these kinds of large scale works. And Joanne, you felt, you know, that there are wonderful murals in public places around the city. Alberta Street is a good example.
Right.
On 18th Avenue, there's on the side of a building another at 28th at the Black United Fund building. But there's a question for you, Joanne, about whether, as Henry said, we're sort of really using the opportunity to say some things about where we are and express certain things. Is that not happening enough?
I don't think so. I think there's a real place and a very important place for public art that is actually provocative, that just doesn't comfort you but challenges you to think about a piece of history that you might not have known, which is one thing I appreciate about what the Albino Mural Project did. The topics ranged really through 500 years of African and African American history. So what that group of artists did in the late 1970s, Henry with his Black Cowboys and Civil Rights mural, was leave a piece of history that people could interact with every day, have a relationship with. You walk by it, you look at the figures, and you think, oh, who is that marching next to Martin Luther King? Oh, that's Ralph Abernathy. Or one of the other panels, and I know it was a collaborative project that Henry worked on, so a lot of times the artists were each working on each other's sections. But one of the most powerful ones, I think, was a mural segment, one of the five, that depicted the Middle Passage with slaves lying in a slave ship, hold of a ship. That's not an image that you see very often, and definitely not in public. So the idea that a mural can really cause you to think about something disturbing is not the kind of mural that we're seeing happening in Portland recently. A lot of the murals that are being painted now, I think, are more decorative, don't really have a social message.
And Isaac did the Vanport flood, so that was really a Portland hit thing. You know, an event that really, really was big and noticed by people in Portland. I still talk about it.
Right. It was a traumatic event for many people.
Right. I couldn't think of a word.
Yeah, Izaka's family was in that flood.
Izaka, one of the artists.
Yes, so it had very personal meaning aside from the social meaning. And then when families were flooded out of Vanport, they found it, Black families in particular, found it very difficult to find new housing because of the restrictions and the segregation in Portland. So that event you know, was one of the other images that was part of the group that formed the Albina Mural Project.
I wonder about the, it just occurred to me that the power, perhaps, of this kind of large public art, these kinds of works, is that you, like you said, Joanne, you sort of pass by them on a regular basis, and that gives you, the repeated exposure sort of gives you a chance to dig a little deeper with each time you see it, and maybe look for pieces that you missed the first time.
Right. And in particular with a mural like the two that Henry did, there's so much detail. And I was lucky to have moved to Portland while they were still on the wall, so I saw them in person. And the idea that there were figures in there that you might not immediately recognize, it was only much later that I learned that Henry had painted portraits of family members and some of his friends as figures in those murals. And that makes them come alive too, and connects the current to the past in a way that we often don't see in murals either, that they're representative of actual people that we know. And that's something that the community mural movement really made a point of doing, that there would be figures that would be uplifting and leaders in all kinds of fields. The Wall of Respect mural that was painted in 1967 in Chicago touched off similar murals all around the U.S. There was a wall of truth, a wall of dignity, Philadelphia, Atlanta. Today, there is an interest in African-American art, and in particular art that comes from that time period, Black Power Movement, Civil Rights. And the Tate Museum in London, the Tate Modern, is having an exhibit that just opened this month and will be up until October, titled Soul of a Nation. And it includes examples of mural art, but also there'll be workshops and other kinds of events surrounding that exhibit that will help people understand the connections to jazz and soul and funk music and poetry and spoken word and dance. So Henry's exhibit kind of helps us look at what one man has done in his life with his talent and his perspective on Black culture.
Henry, I'm wondering about just a little bit about your the portraits of your family members that people will see alongside more famous figures. There's something very sort of, it's your use of color and light that makes your portraits very warm. Did that make it very easy for you to include family members in the work you've been doing recently?
What I did is we had to go to the libraries and thing and do research. And I found, you know, pictures to kind of go from. And what I did is just took a lot of face pictures of people in my family and inserted them on the pictures that I was doing in the Black Cowboy thing, because it really, we wasn't dealing with real public people like Martin Luther King on the cowboy mural. So I said, well, you know, I want to show my family on
right.
it. So I put all my family members, myself, and you know, and people like that in the mural. And I also, you know, had Indian in there because I wanted to show that the Indians really helped a lot of the slaves and things when they was freed and helped them get to certain places, like up north and all of that. So I had an Indian in there, like guiding them to certain spot, and so I, you know, every picture in that particular mural was somebody that was related or close to me, my brothers, my aunts, and my son, my, you know, myself. But well, it was kind of good because after we opened the murals up, they had this big opening, and a lot of those big officials came out for that big opening. It was a big celebration, and they recorded some kids and thing talking on the mic, and they were saying, oh, that guy right there on the mural, I went to school with him, he's my friend. And you know, so it was good to see people out there that kind of saw some people they recognized too, and depicted in the mural.
There you go. I think that's what people are going to see starting this Saturday, the mix of some well-known figures along with people they might actually know in their everyday life. We're going to go ahead and wrap up. Thank you, Joanne Alexiak, local artist, advocate. And thank you very much, Henry. Your show will open this coming Saturday, the 29th of July. I believe the reception is 7 to 10 p.m.
At 7 p.m. to 10 p.m., I imagine. Somebody said, 7 in the morning.
7 to 10 p.m. on this coming Saturday, July 29th at Greenhouse Gallery and Boutique at 18 North Killingsworth in North Portland. Henry, thank you very much for joining us on the show, and Joanne, thanks very much to you.
You're very welcome. Thank you, Eric.
Okay.
You've been listening to Art Focus on KBOO FM Community Radio. This is Eric Bartels.
Good afternoon, KBOO listeners. The time is 12 o'clock on the news. Coming up after these announcements, Buscando America. And then after that is FA Radio and then Tonali Radio. So we have some wonderful Spanish programming coming up for you this afternoon. And then at 4 o'clock is Democracy Now! And then after that, 5 o'clock, the daily, independently produced KBOO News. So stick around all afternoon and be sure and listen. And thank you for listening. It's KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is always looking for ways people can work with us and support us. KBOO has a wish list, and we'd love help getting some of those items donated. Some things on our list include a color printer, digital recorders, a pop-up canopy, dishwashing detergent, brooms and mops, or services like roofing, plumbing, and electrical work. Please contact station co-manager Delphine at Del.